I am back in the US of A, god damn it. The sun is shining. There is a day of full sparkling possibilities ahead. Lots of thoughts this week inspired from seeing friends and families in the UK this past week, and perhaps an inkling that my libido may be coming back. This week's interview is with Abby, a wonderful, open and loving girl I met through the poly meetup she runs, and we get into a lot of stuff, including why I'm so weird. It's my unconventional life. Cock-a-doodle-doo.
I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived.
My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it's kind of a personal ed. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex and relationships in 2016. Sponsored by, you guessed it, no one right now. Every week I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2016? So, it was a lovely trip back to the UK, spending time with my mum and family, doing some awesome Ring of Honor shows, meeting up with so many friends, and making some new ones. It is a blessed life. It really is. Seeing so many friends with kids, though, did give me a lot to think about, like the conversations that parents have with kids, or rather the questions that kids ask and how you respond to them. One of my really good friends has a 5-year-old and he's already asking existential questions about death as well as where babies come from. And this, I think, is a wonderful and valuable part of being a parent. So it gives you a chance, if you take it, to re-examine your own views about the world. I think this applies directly to relating and parenting. When I interviewed Goddess from SPLA on one of the earlier podcasts, for example, it was questions from her daughter that directly influenced her to question her previous beliefs about love and monogamy. I did think about other conversations when kids are younger, though, that seem to be quite a pointless drain on your time and energy. Like explaining why kids can't have something. But I want it! There just seems to be no logical counterpoint to a kid that wants something that they can't have. And it seems that even if you explain it to them and then distract them so they forget about it, it just comes up time and time again. Like not one word of what you said got through. I'm sure all kids are like this. I probably had my moments too, and perhaps it also says something about the human condition of consistently wanting something we can't have, no matter what we're told. Damn, that's profound. See, just a few hours around kids and I'm already writing philosophy. Let's get that baby baking ASAP, girl. Wherever you are. And I found that after a couple of years, kids actually sleep for 12 hours a night. 12 hours! That's half a day when you don't have to do anything for them. I mean, I only need 7 hours sleep. That's 5 hours a day when I can do whatever I want. Longer with NyQuil. Your Honour, I would like that last remark stricken from the record. But seriously, how hard can it be? Joking aside, I did feel some trepidation about being a parent. I interviewed my sister for an upcoming episode and she seems to think it would be too big of a transition for me. But I don't think so. When I'm in, I'm in. That's one universal theme in my life and you can take that to the bank, Jack. Besides, nothing is 100% of a positive proposition if you're a conscionable, reasoning human being. Me wanting to be a wrestler or having sex all have some doubts. I watched an episode of Friends on the flight back from England. It was the one where Rachel tells Ross that she's pregnant with his kid. And so they decide to have a co-parenting arrangement. And that was over 15 years ago. But I guess that's why it's seen as okay in society, as long as it's only a plan B. But what if it's not a plan B? What if, actually, it's a better, more workable situation? If it's not, what is it about a sexual relationship that helps being a parent? I mean, there's no argument that oxytocin, from the euphoric flush of early love, helps to build bonds and rapport and connection, but it's equally undeniable that this fades with time, and more importantly, can often hide our ability to truly judge if this is someone we could partner with for the rest of our lives, or even perhaps if we want to have kids at all. I mean, if it's based on an emotion that is very likely to change, should we base such a lifelong decision on it? I have had tinges of libido returning. I've cut out all porn for a few months now, so maybe that's helping. Now, there's nothing morally wrong with porn whatsoever. I need to make that clear. Outside, perhaps, some of the emotional effects on some of the people in front of the camera, but that's a totally different issue and discussion, perhaps. I do think, however, that it has to numb your visual sexual response somehow. Has to. Either way, so far I am pretty happy with the results. And it doesn't hurt that I've actually been around some very pretty girls too. Ah, the true beauty of the feminine. They've actually done studies, you know, that show being around a beautiful woman actually raises a guy's testosterone. Speaking of which, after next weekend, I'm getting on the proper meds and ramping up my here testicles for some new school sperm banking. El Cremo will flow. This week's interview is with Abby, a totally chill, inspirational, wonderful girl I met from the poly meetup group that she runs. She's been non-monogamous for most of her life, or open, as she likes to call it, which I think is a good way to put it. And she has nothing but love and kindness to give the world. If only there were more people like her. So, Abby, my dear, here we are. It's a grey and rainy Sunday morning in Los Angeles. Thank you for your hospitality. Welcome me into your home here to have a little bit of a discussion about polyamory and lifestyles in general. You look very nice today. You got your hair all done up nice with a little bow.
I dyed it. I dyed it, and then I put a special Halloween bow in it to celebrate. This is how I'm celebrating Halloween. I'm not getting dressed up, but...
Nice. You know. So you said actually you listened to a few of the podcasts so far, so you're kind of up to date with where I stand.
Right.
What's your take on it, like, as having listened to it? Because I'm always interested in getting people's opinions of A, the podcast, and how do you think I come across in the podcast?
I think you come across as somebody who is trying to explore something and hasn't quite figured out what it is that you're actually exploring.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment for sure.
It's as if you fell down the rabbit hole and then you are sort of like, well, what is this rabbit hole? You're having an existential crisis of a rabbit hole.
Does it sound like a crisis? Like
A little bit, but that's a totally normal thing to go through when people kind of open up and they start to question what their relationship is. You know, it kind of feels like, well, have I been doing it wrong this whole time?
Yeah, it's funny. I interviewed Rye recently, who's big in the poly community. Polyamoryconsultant.com is his website. And he says that oftentimes when people open up, they have what's known as a second adolescence, and they go through the sort of same sort of feelings that you go through when you first go through puberty and sort of come into your own sexual being, so to speak. And this is a second way through with that. Is that something you experienced or not?
Oh, totally.
Well, yeah. Give us a bit of the backstory here now. I mean, when did you first come across the idea, the concept of non-monogamy? Was it something that just sort of came to you and then you met other people? Or was there anything you specifically read, anyone you specifically met?
Kind of all of the above. I mean, I was in my late teens and early 20s, and I had a boyfriend who was bi and had a girlfriend and also a boyfriend. And so, you know, I kind of ended up with that whole tribe. And I'd happened to meet a girl who we both kind of hooked up with the same people a lot, and we kind of just were really chill about it. Like, it wasn't really, we shared our boyfriends. There was no word for it. We just were like, that's chill.
Yeah.
But then it started to kind of roll into more of a practice than it was just sort of like a college young person sort of mindset.
Right. And when and was then, this then? How long ago was this?
Probably in like in my early 20s.
Early 20s, okay.
Yeah.
And so at the time it wasn't like a badge of honor. It wasn't something you wore proudly and said, this is who I am. It was just something that you guys did and didn't think much about.
I still don't feel that way about it. It's a personal choice, and I kind of celebrate love in general, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous or gay or straight or trans, bi, whatever you are. There's just no wrong way to love somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, because I met you through sort of poly picnic meetup that you put on right. every now and again. And we talked about SPLA briefly. And obviously, that was my first sort of foray into the non-monogamous landscape, so to speak. And I think there was a sense that oftentimes when people break into that world, they do wear it on their sleeve and it becomes a big part of who they are. And I think to some people that can scare them away.
Yeah, totally. I find that pretty off-putting actually, because for me personally, it doesn't really have anything to do with me. Like I wasn't, when I first opened up, it wasn't like I'm poly. It was like, I just really like that my homegirl fell in love with my boyfriend, and I really like that my boyfriend fell in love with her. This has nothing to do with me. This, like, everybody's happy here, you know?
Wow. What do you think gave you the ability to have that sort of open-minded worldview? Oftentimes when I meet people who have different traditional worldviews, they have had something in their past, whether it was their parents or a particularly influential figure, that made them view the world in a different way. Was there something in your early life?
Yeah, well, sort of. Not so much in my early life, but I think I grew up around really awesome people.
Uh-huh.
I went to an art school in a gay-friendly area and spent a lot of time at gay bars and just hanging out, you know, with open sexuality. So, you know, there was no real judgment. I mean, if I showed up at a bar with a bunch of my friends and two boyfriends, they were just like, cool, they're cute.
Where was this? Like, what school was this?
University of the Arts in Philadelphia. And the other one I went to was the Delaware College of Art and Design in Delaware.
Okay. And that's what you grew up around there was? That what you
yeah, East Coast. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, was your family as open-minded as that or not?
They never knew.
Oh.
Yeah, they never knew.
Did they know now?
No.
Oh.
No.
Not something you openly discuss with your family? Or,
no, not at all. I'm pretty sure my mom just thinks I'm a closet lesbian. I'm okay with that. I just kind of let her believe whatever she wants to believe, you know?
Right. Yeah. So you did have a traditional upbringing in that sense, in terms of your family?
Oh, I mean, I guess, you know, there was another episode I was listening to where somebody was talking about their dysfunctional family, and I guess I kind of fit the stereotype there.
Oh, yeah.
My family was full of codependent drug addicts, alcoholics, you know, and they cleaned up, but they're still like dry drunks. Like they're just very angry at each other all the time.
Right.
And blaming each other for everything, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of went my own way and found, like I said, really awesome friends, open-minded friends that didn't judge me or try and make me think the way that they do about certain things. They just were very loving and cool, just really chill people.
It's interesting, isn't it, why some people recreate and replicate whatever they're shown as a child and other people go in the opposite direction completely. You know,
right.
I know people who've said, my parents like completely fucked me up and they did all this sort of stuff and I'll never be normal and healthy and happy because of it. And there are people who've had abhorrent childhoods that go, I just realized I didn't want to live that life and I moved on and now I'm very happy. And you wonder why. What makes the difference?
Yeah, I think I had kind of an eye-opening experience when I was a teenager because I was hit by a car. And I woke up in a hospital 4 days later and thought, I guess I was kind of given the ability to see that life is not promised.
Yeah.
And at a young age, that's a really kind of hard thing to go through.
How old were you?
I was 15.
Yeah.
Some people don't even get that their whole lives. That's until it's right. Over, you know, and I was 15 and just sort of like, okay, so I could have died. I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and not listen to what anybody tells me and just do it my own way.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes me truly happy. And that's really is what it is, what it's all about. For me, polyamory, open relationships, non-monogamy, whatever you want to call it, isn't so much about this narcissistic, like, you know, I'm polyamorous, I'm better than other people. It's just do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be with one person, great. If you want to be with 20 people, great. Please use protection.
All right. Good luck. Yeah.
But, you know, great.
Yeah.
Do whatever makes you happy.
Right. And that's a great attitude to have, for sure. Live by the golden rule, of course. But for me then, perhaps I didn't get run over by a car, but I got meningitis when I was 19. No, that's a lie, 17. And I was in a coma for like 3 days. And when I came out, I certainly realized, okay, life's fragile. There's no guarantees. If you have any dreams, you've got to pursue them. And that was why I traveled around the world and essentially pursued my childhood dream of being a professional wrestler. But I've never linked that to my sort of open-minded world views in terms of dating and parenting.
Hmm.
But maybe you've just hit on something there. Maybe there is that. I don't know.
I find what motivates most people to do anything is death. You know, I mean, I took a lot of psychology courses in college, but there was one that kind of stuck out to me because it hit close to home, and it had to do with the psychology of death.
Yeah.
And how most of what we do kind of wraps around this idea that your life isn't promised. You know,
right.
Something I say a lot is carpe diem. You will one day just be a skeleton and your flesh will be eaten by worms. Like,
right.
So carpe diem, you know, live it up. Do everything you can and do it the way that you want to do it. You know, so I spent most of my 20s, I had a lot of fun. I dated a lot of guys, a lot of different types of people.
Uh-huh.
I had good sex. I had good friends. I wasn't too much into drugs. I never really experimented with drugs, but that's just not my thing.
Yeah.
You know, I traveled a lot. I have this wonderful dog that keeps me company, that traveled with me. I traveled with the circus.
Tell me about that. What were you doing in the circus?
I hooked up with Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not a human pretzel or anything like that. I just did customer service stuff.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Still cool. Got to meet lots of different interesting people and travel. And what did you learn from that then, from all those sort of experiences? Because here I am and I'm doing this podcast about non-monogamy. And like you said, I really only kind of dipped my toe in it. You know, I mean, when I think back on my life, I've had maybe a handful of what I'd call non-monogamous relationships, but they weren't deep and intense because we didn't spend all of our time together. And so I'm not sure if I can really speak to that end. But you have lived way more of a non-monogamous life than I have. What have you learned from it?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, a big part of becoming more into it, I guess, had to do with being on the road because I was able to see fellow nomads.
Right.
You know, because I was traveling for like 5 years. I just didn't stop. Like, I was kind of like Jack Kerouac.
Wow.
If Jack Kerouac had a camera, you know.
Yeah.
But I was able to see fellow nomads just sort of living a non-monogamous lifestyle and it working for them. And it started to make more sense as I grew it into an adult.
Yeah.
You know, because like I said, when I was younger, it was very much whatever, like there's no label for this. I guess I kind of got introduced to, I find out about the word poly from books like The Ethical Slut, which I never read like all the way through. I didn't find it that interesting.
Oh. Huh.
But I read that in my early 20s, yeah. But so when I was on the road and I met people who were like, oh, we're poly, we're on the same page.
Right.
There was a lot of, how am I trying to be polite about this?
Don't be polite, just say it.
There was a lot of sexual frustration on the road, not from me personally.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, when you meet other nomads who have been on the road for a long time, they meet you and they're like, yo,
What?
You know, let's have a three-way, or you know what I mean? So yeah, we're poly. Let's, you know, get into this. It's totally chill. And
right,
I'm honestly not a three-way.
Yeah.
But I was able to, I think because I came from such a open-minded background that I wasn't judgmental about it or freaked out or, right, you know, I just sort of let it flow.
And God, I must be the only person I know who hasn't had a threesome. It's ridiculous.
No, no. Like I said, I'm not a three-way.
Oh, you never did?
Person. Not sex. No. I've had three-way, like, fool around, make out sort of thing, but not sex, no.
How far towards sex did it get?
Like, just touching.
So you were naked or no nakedness?
No nakedness.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah, okay. Interesting.
Like boob stuff, you know. Second base, as they say, when I was like a teenager, you know.
I love it. So why did it stop there? Did it just...
I just am not a one-night stand sort of person,
right,
you know, when it comes to sex anyway. I mean, I think that that has a lot to do with the female mind, the female sex drive.
Well, maybe I think I'm quite close to that myself then, because I've been reading The Way of the Superior Man by David Deida, and he talks about how 90% of people either have a very masculine essence or a very feminine essence, and that 10% have more of a balanced essence. And I think I'm more in that balanced essence because I'm not an alpha male at all, you know. And really do I identify with a lot of attributes that most people would consider feminine, and one of those is not really being into casual sex. I tried my hand at it, you know, as best I can, and it just, I don't know, it's just this weird thing. I want to be able to talk to someone afterwards, and, you know, like, for me, intimacy is sharing something more than just your physical body with someone.
Oh, totally.
Right. Totally. But having said that, I think that's the biggest misunderstanding, I think, from most people when they hear the word polyamory, is they think that it is just about sex. It's like swing, it's about having, right, sex with as many people as you can. And not true at all, right? Well, at least not for you and not for the majority of people that I've met.
I actually used to get really upset when people would assume that about me. And I guess I've kind of let go of some of that anger by hosting some of these poly picnics and whatnot.
Right.
Because for some people, it is. I can be judgmental about that and be like, well, that's just kind of lame. But for some people, it is just a sexual thing.
Yeah.
For me personally, no, it's definitely not. I mean, I think a lot of women can relate to this when I say that, you know, when you're about to sleep with somebody, when, like, sex, sleep with somebody, not fooling around, not oral sex, not making out, that's all just fun. But when you're about to have sex with somebody, there's this little voice that pops up in the back of your head. It's like, well, what if I get pregnant?
Really?
And that little voice has stopped me from having sex. Yeah. I've had fun with a lot of people. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when it came to sex, no.
But even with a condom? I mean...
Nope. Hey, accidents can happen.
But it's such a small possibility.
No, it's like, there's still like 2% chance.
No.
Oh, absolutely. It says it right on the condom package.
99%. Chance of it working, but I think that that 1% is people who don't use it properly.
I think, yeah, you have to be very smart. And I mean, I was always on birth control anyway,
right,
for other reasons other than that. I had to take it for health issues.
Uh-huh.
But there were times in my life where I wasn't on birth control and I was just using condoms,
right?
And in those times, that was when that voice was more prevalent,
right?
And now that after the hysterectomy, the voice is actually just kind of gone.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to my 30s, you know? This should be fun. I mean, I turned 31 last year, so, you know, I'm still young in my 30s.
Yeah, right. You got a good number of years on me, that's for sure. Yeah. But it's interesting, yeah, I often do say that about how the misconception is that it's just about sex, but I have met other people that really, largely and truly, and more guys, I'd think so, than girls, it's just about having sex with more people. But there's no judgment there, because at the end of the day, as long as it's done conscionably and with an open mind, then what's the harm, right? I think that's one of the biggest hang-ups that I have, is that sex has to mean something. And I don't know whether it really makes me happier. See what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only speak for myself, and I know a lot of chicks that have this problem, but, you know, the female orgasm is mostly emotional. I can't get off if I'm not into this person, if I'm not, you know, if I didn't have some sort of intellectual conversation with them beforehand, you know.
You see, I've had this conversation before, and to play devil's advocate, in the early 1900s, when women were treated for hysteria, they'd go and see a doctor, and a doctor would have a very sort of basic, rudimentary, sometimes steam-powered vibrator, and he would bring a woman to climax, and they wouldn't consider it sexual, but that was the treatment. So they had no emotional connection to the doctor, but they could still have an orgasm.
That's a really good argument.
Right.
That's, you know, it's debatable. I'm not saying it's the end all be all.
Right.
But that's definitely what it is for me. I can't get off if I don't like this person, if they're just sort of a penis or, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not big into toys either.
Oh,
for
yeah?
that reason.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I don't know whether I just place these caveats there because I'm trying to be different. Because I remember when I was growing up, and it really comes back to death as well. I had terrible death anxiety in my teenage years because I'd always grown up kind of Christian. We went to Church of England, you know, so we only sort of believe in the good stuff about Jesus and that. You don't hear any of the Old Testament stuff, you know, Sodom, Gomorrah, never heard of it. But then when I had to study religious studies at school and I started going, oh, there's Hinduism and there's Islam. And I was like, well, wait a second. Either all of these are wrong and one of them is right, or more likely all of them are kind of wrong. And that freaked me out because then it linked me to like, God, one day I'm going to die. And when I die, I won't ever exist again.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I think, was when I started trying to pursue a life less ordinary. And when I was married, my ex-wife got me a book. I don't even remember what the name of it was now, but it was by a psychiatrist written about death, how to come to terms with death. But rather than helping me, it did the exact opposite. And it said that all of these fears and worries that you have are perfectly valid. And actually, if you aren't petrified of death, then you're crazy. You know,
right,
which most people are. And so through reading that, basically he said that everything in life, as you said, is kind of a functional neuroses that we create to stop talking or worrying about the bigger neuroses, which we have no control over whatsoever, which is the fact that ultimately we will not exist one day. And so when I read that, I thought, well, Christ, maybe all these sort of things like not being able to have casual sex and not wanting to do drugs and basically not wanting to do all the things that most people do normally within society, I was doing as a way to somehow subconsciously feel as though that would mean they're all going to grow old and die and not exist. But if I'm different, maybe that means I won't.
Mm. Sort of like fulfilling your legend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. I think perhaps everybody at some point thinks that they're different than everyone else and they were put on this earth for a special reason. When I was a kid, I used to think I was an alien because I had like a big sticky out belly. And I used to think that aliens had come down and made them like a human but had fucked up the belly. And that was the one little key that gave away that I was an alien and they were going to come back and save me. And I was going to be popular then.
That's great.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm still waiting on the aliens right now. But so this has been, like you said, about 10 years now that you've been living more of a non-monogamous life. Did you find it fulfilling? You feel like you're in a good place in your life now in terms of that or not?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't regret any of it. I haven't done that thing where I'm sort of looking back on it and being like, oh, all these relationships and there's not one meaningful relationship. That's complete crap. They've all been totally meaningful in their own ways.
All right. Now, I've got friends who are girls who have said that if you're with a girl and she's okay with you sleeping with somebody else, there's something wrong with her. And that mentally, she must be fucked up because otherwise she'd be angry and jealous and all these sort of things. And I sort of like, I wrinkle my brow and go, I just don't get that. I don't see it at all.
You know, I don't know how to explain to people that that really is just their own insecurities and issues with control.
Right.
And that's all it is. It has nothing to do with love or romance.
Yeah. I think they say that it's something intrinsically human in nature to be jealous of other people. Certainly as a female, they say that's what it is, you know?
Well, you can get jealous, but that has nothing to do with your boyfriend. I have very rarely gotten jealous of a boyfriend, but let's just say I did. That would mean that, you know, so if I'm sitting home on a Friday night, my boyfriend is out with this beautiful woman, and I don't know why that would make me upset, but let's say it does, you know, and I'm like, and I'm just sitting at home all by myself, you know, just depressed and miserable. Well, then the question I should ask myself isn't, well, do I have love? Do I love this person enough, you know, that it bothers me? It really, what I should be asking myself is, why do I feel these emotions?
Yeah.
What is it about this Friday night that leaves me feeling lonely? And the answer is probably always personal. It's a situational thing.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with my boyfriend being out with another woman. It has everything to do with my own personal problems.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Your boyfriend being out with a girl just triggered something right. that's deeper inside you. For
because
sure.
9 times out of 10, you know, I mean, coming from, if we're going to turn the tables, because I have had some jealous boyfriends, right? You know, so if they're sitting at home on a Friday night and they're like, ah, Abby's out and she's with this other guy and he's going to get to go play with her tits all night. And, you know, I want to play with her tits and, you know, it's stupid. I'm just lonely now. Well, it's like, you know, next Friday, he's going to get to play with my tits, right. You know? So it's like, chill out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's enough love for everybody. If you truly live in the moment, you begin to understand that it's not about you being the most important thing in somebody else's life.
You know, I hear that, and I've interviewed a few people that say that, that it's not necessarily about being monogamous or non-monogamous. It's about being the most important thing in someone's life. And I sort of said, I don't really want to be the most important thing in someone's life. I'm okay. As long as they treat me with respect and they respect my time, then that's okay. Because I kind of look at it like any kind of friendship, right? I don't have to be someone's most important thing. I don't feel in any way unfulfilled if I'm not the apple of someone's eye. But I think perhaps, arguably, for a lot of girls that grow up with Disney and this romantic notion that you see it, and with the soundtrack, and it's so powerful, it gets ingrained in the back of your head to where you kind of want to feel that, I guess.
Right. Well, I think that that's sort of a major problem in Western society. It's freaking Disney and chick flicks. Right. You know what I mean? It created this story that we tend to want to live out, but is completely unrealistic. And I don't think that that is a negative view of relationships. I think that's just realistic. Like, it's just, we are not monogamous creatures by nature. And truth is, you know, we're animals and we want to do naughty things to each other and connect on many different levels.
Yeah.
And that's okay, you know, but to say that Prince Charming is going to come along and make no other man want me, or that I shouldn't want to be with any other man, I think is kind of insane and just kind of, it's trying way too hard. I'd rather, you know, my boyfriends just do their thing, be right. happy, you know?
Well, it's interesting. I did a podcast with an evolutionary biologist a while back, and I gave him that viewpoint. And I said, hey, I've read Sex at Dawn, and that basically, you know, I don't believe human beings are naturally monogamous. And what he said, and it kind of made sense, I kind of saw it for a second, was that human beings are not lifelong monogamous, but we are short-term monogamous. So this notion of wanting to be with one person is a very natural human instinct. The problem is it doesn't last really much more than 3 to 5 years. And so it's not about being polyamorous where you should, you know, it's not natural to want to be with one person. It's better to say we shouldn't have the expectation this is going to last forever. And at whatever point, if this doesn't really tick all our boxes anymore, then we should be able to move on openly and conscionably without it freaking people out and getting upset. It's the expectation of lifelong monogamy which is the problem, not the idea of monogamy in and of itself. Have you ever felt monogamous? Have you ever felt like, I only want to be with this one person, even for just a short period of time?
Oh, yeah, totally.
All right.
Totally. I mean, I'm not completely closed off to it. I think that it happens due to other reasons in my life that have nothing to do with my relationships. I had to go through 2 different surgeries within a year. And, you know, of course I wasn't dating anybody. I just was concentrating on my health and a lot of meditation and long walks with my dog. And I only had one partner. And we're pretty chill, you know. He and I, we get together probably like a couple times a month and piss off my neighbors for a while. You know? And catch up. It's not just sexual, you know.
Right.
We're friends.
Yeah.
But that's what it's all about, you know. I mean, it sort of allows you to go with the flow and be sort of plastic, you know, just sort of...
Malleable, yeah.
Yeah, malleable. Adaptive. Yeah, adaptive.
Right.
You know, I let people come and go as they please.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to be with me, that's fine. If you want to be with me, that's great. If I want to be with you too, that's even better.
But is it something that when you meet people in a dating environment that you put out there very early and you say, hey,
oh, yeah,
you do?
Absolutely. Like the first date or sometimes even the first handshake.
And how often does that turn people off?
I'm a chick.
Right.
So it's very different from you.
Right.
The problem that I face isn't that it turns people off, it's that it turns guys on. And that I can feel sometimes like I have to have a machete in my back pocket, like just beating them down, like, you know, because it just gets way too a bit much for me.
Yeah, it's a different experience for men and women, isn't it? Yeah, very different experience for sure.
And because a lot of people think it's sexual, they think that I'm just spread like peanut butter and, you know, I'm just ready to go. And that's usually not the case, you know?
Right.
That's actually a big part of why I don't usually say I'm poly. I say I'm open because I'm referring to my heart and my mind and not my legs.
Yeah. Do you think it's something that I should say? I mean, you listen to the podcast and so you know that I'm really trying to find my place in the world. Do you think it would behoove me at all to bring it up early on in a conversation with a girl? I mean, I've probably gone on, I want to say, maybe 10 dates in the last 3 months. And I've been very cautious to not bring it up super early because I just, you know, I don't feel like it's a conversation that early in the process of meeting someone new is an easy conversation to have because they automatically assume, as we said, it's all about just having sex and I'm going to be having sex with loads of different girls at the same time as them. When the reality is, again, as you know from listening to the podcast, I'm lucky if I have sex with one person. You know, let alone fucking a handful. So is it worth me saying it? Is it worth me bringing that up? Or is it better to wait until it gets to a stage where it's even...
Oh, no, don't wait.
Really?
Never wait. But I will say that there is an art to having the conversation.
Okay.
And I think that staying away from labels is a good idea.
Yes, yes.
Especially a word like poly. Open is, for me, has been a much better word. But I think that the best way to have that conversation is to ask the person, what do you look for in a relationship? Okay. And, you know, if they go the route of something a bit more conventional, then maybe don't even say it. Just maybe be like, all right, well, I can enjoy the rest of this date and go about my business. Or you could, you know, if they say something that is a bit more your cup of tea, then you start to have the conversation and say, well, listen, this is, you know, it's kind of how I think about relationships. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, and make sure that you say that you're not completely closed off to the idea of monogamy, because I know you're not.
Right.
But you also don't want to sort of lead them down that road of like, well, maybe one day we can be monogamous, but let's keep it open.
Yeah.
You want to have the conversation in a way that allows them to do the talking and not so much you.
Okay. That's good advice. Yeah.
It's a bit more respectful. And I feel like, you know, the one thing that I've sort of gained from all this, I think, is learning how to love. Loving people is not an act or is not a feeling. It's actually an action. It's more something that I do, not something I am going through. Like, I don't fall in love. I just am love.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of times people that typically in monogamous relationships, I know it happens in polyamorous too, but typically in monogamous, is that they don't understand how to love people. They're stuck in this sort of infantile look at what love is, which is probably from their mother. And not in a bad way, your mother took care of you. You know, your mother was at your constant need. Your mother, you know, fed you and you could cry and there would be your mother. But at some point, you got to grow up and understand that you got to be someone's mother or father. Or you could be both, if you ask me. You could be both and a mother and a father.
Right.
And so what that means is letting... I guess it could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But I think that it means truly being happy for your partner and whatever their partner wants to do. So sometimes when you have that conversation with somebody, they might say something like, I really only want to be with one person. But come to think of it, you know, if that's what makes you happy, if you have another girlfriend already and you guys are in love, then okay, cool. Well, let's go do this, you know? And a lot of times that's how things kind of unfold. I find it to be very unproductive if you sort of come at them with this notion of what polyamory is and go read these books and it's just whatever you want it to be, as long as it's loving.
Yeah. Do you think it would be off-putting for a potential date to listen to my podcast?
No. In fact, I totally think you should be like, hey, I do this podcast and I'm exploring love and, you know, I'd love for you to listen to it and give it a shot. And I mean, one thing that I've certainly done is met a few strangers and sort of in passing or biking around or whatever. And I've said, hey, I do these poly picnics. You know, if you have an open mind, I'd love you to come out. If you don't, you're not welcome.
Right.
But it just puts it out there. You know, if that's not their thing, fine. They might be in a monogamous relationship and, you know, they might come to these things and be like, I get it. This is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to my lady now and just be with my lady. But
right,
I dig this.
Yeah, they understand it for sure. But it seems to me you're in a far happier, not necessarily more secure, but you know who you are way better than I do.
And I think I know who I am way better than most people do.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not bragging. I'm just...
No, you've done the work and, you know, you've figured out who you are. Exactly. You've traveled the road. And oftentimes I've sort of been a bit too cautious to do that. I think if I was having sex with anyone, I think I'd feel... Because to me, now I go on a date with a girl and it's almost everything is into this one basket because... If this doesn't go well, then I'm not going to be having sex with anybody. And then it goes with the next girl, and then the next girl, and then the next girl.
Oh, you have what's the word for it? That sort of male
desperation,
sex drive that, you know, that like, oh, my dick is just, it's hard and I don't know what to do with it anymore.
No, that's the funny thing. It's not, because I used to have that. And now my libido is pretty low. It's not a fucking thing. You see what I'm saying? It's not like I don't want to fuck girls and get off. I want to connect to them. I want to hug them. I want to kiss them. I want to hold their hands. I want to go and watch movies with them and have a laugh with them and sleep next to them. And at some point, probably I'd end up having sex with them because that's just what naturally happens. But that's a small part of it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's the intimacy. It's the physical connection that I really crave. More so than just the physical act of getting off.
Right.
And so it's not that, I need this. It's just like Dostoevsky. I pronounced his name wrong. He wrote Tales from the Underground. Is that what it was called?
I don't know.
Notes from the Underground, okay. I think. I was reading this recently. I read 9 stories by J.D. Salinger. And in one of the books that he wrote, one of the little short stories that he wrote, he quotes Dostoevsky and I think it's Notes from the Underground where he says, what is hell? Hell is the inability to love someone. And that's what I feel. I feel like I'm not able to fully love someone in that regard.
Boo boo, that's not good. You gotta get that straightened out.
Right. And how do I do that?
Well, I got this beautiful dog right here. She might be able to fix that problem.
Yeah.
If you love a dog, you know, it'll open up your heart in a lot of ways.
But see, that's the thing. Platonic love, I have plenty. I have tons of friends. I've got tons of what I call FWABs, friends without benefits, that we hang out, we watch movies, I rub their feet, I give them massages. Sometimes I'll even like cuddle while we watch movies. Anybody watching from outside will go, oh, you're dating that person, but it's a purely platonic friendship. It's never sexual, at least from my regard. And so I have that side of love completely. And I've always felt that I've been blessed in terms of loving friendships. But in terms of sexual loving friendships, I've been starving for the majority of my life in between these long-term monogamous relationships that I've been in. And that's really where the issue is, you see.
Mm.
And I don't know why.
What's the... there's some kind of block here.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. When I flew in this morning, the air stewardess, it was actually the same air stewardess who'd been on the flight out this weekend. And I don't know why, but I felt like we connected. And then as I was flying back today, she came over and pointed at me and said, oh, I remember you from the flight over. And where do you live? And there was a bit of a chat. And I don't know, sometimes I'm naive about girls when I don't know whether they like me or not. And usually because it doesn't happen very often. So when it does happen, I kind of go, ah, okay, this girl kind of likes me. Because she was sort of like making conversation and then sort of waiting for me to make conversation rather than just leaving it at that and then going on with her job, right? And maybe I'm crazy. Maybe she was just being professional. But I got the sense that she liked me more. And that voice in the back of my head was going, just ask her out for a coffee. She lives in LA. You live in LA. What's the worst that can happen? She's got a boyfriend. She's got a girlfriend. Or, you know, she doesn't like you that way. And I was like, yeah, that is the worst that can happen. And then I'd feel really rejected and awful and weird. So I'm just not going to do it. And this happens consistently time and time again, you know.
You know, I'm a big fan of social experiments. I think this is a lot of how I spent a lot of my 20s.
Okay.
I find that doing a lot of social experiments helps to find out, you know, what is troubling you. Because you had kind of become someone else for just a moment, you know? So, for example, when I think I was like 23 and I was taking this sociology course for my final project, I dressed up just really trashy. Like, uh-huh. I had butt shorts that say princess and my ass kind of hanged out a little bit. And I had a tank top that, you know, I cut the collar so it showed a lot of cleavage, and I had a push-up bra.
Right.
I put on all this makeup. Like, I never wear makeup, you know. And at the time, I had really long, different colored locks. So I really stood out, you know, and I counted how many free drinks I got. And I got pretty toasted. I don't drink that much.
Right.
Like, anyone who knows me knows I don't drink that much. So, you know, I made sure that I went with a couple guys to keep me safe in case anybody slipped with me anything. And sure. I have had that experience before where I got slipped something. So it allowed me to kind of see the world through somebody who dresses in that way and remembered who I was, you know, remembered why I don't dress in that way. And it's not to diss people who do, but it's to understand that when I dress to sexually objectify my body, guys would sexually objectify my body.
Right.
And because I am more of, I kind of hate this term, but asapiosexual, I would much rather have good conversations with people. So I'm just going to rock a Beatles t-shirt and strike up a conversation about music and meet people that way.
Right.
And it really helped me to learn about myself in that way. So I always kind of go back to if I'm ever stuck on something and I don't quite understand what this block is in my life, sometimes I'll just go do a social experiment and see what I find and hopefully the answer, you know?
Yeah.
May not be the answer, but I can assure you that I've learned something. So maybe what I'm saying is maybe you just need to go, like, can I curse here? Can I curse on
this? Yeah, you can say one.
Maybe you just need to go fuck a lot of women. Like, just go out and, like, go on freaking Tinder and just be like, hey, do you want to hook up? Like, you know what I mean?
Right, but I've been on Tinder and I haven't gone, hey, do you want to hook up? Because I never did. And more importantly, when I went, hey, you want to get a coffee, they was never replying to any of these messages. So.
What about, like, you know, so you said you're a member of Sex Positive LA, you know, all these swingers parties and, you know, things like that. What else? Like, I don't know if BDSM is your thing, but like there's dungeons and things like that, Kinky Salon and all those places.
I've been to one sort of play party and it just, it wasn't for me. Yeah, I remember.
See, that's
going,
what I'm talking about. You got to just let go of it, right? Just do it anyway. Just be somebody else for a night.
Like have sex when you don't want to?
Yeah, just do it.
I don't know whether that's going to work. Like, quite literally, I don't know whether that's going to work, right?
I think you'd be surprised.
I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. I think what ends up happening is you throw yourself out there and you kind of become an embarrassing mess of yourself and you kind of just learn to laugh at yourself. And that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
you don't sound too convinced.
No, I'm just putting. I'm visualizing myself being in this situation of like having sex with someone I don't.
I have never been to a play party, so it might not be the best advice on my part.
There are girls I'm sure that I could sleep with that I'm not necessarily attracted to, but that doesn't seem fair on them.
Hmm.
Right.
I think as long as you disclose that information beforehand, I don't think it's attractive to them. Well, I don't know if you have to say that.
A second. Just so you know, I'm doing this experiment of having sex with girls I'm not attracted to.
I would leave the I'm not attracted to you thing out of it. I would just say I'm doing this experiment and I want to explore myself.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet you'd hook up with some, I don't know, somebody. some good head, at least.
I think you're onto something. I really do. I don't think you're wrong at all. And in fact, I've had people say this to me for the longest time. My two best friends from England, Alan and Zia, were forever telling me, because when I was like 19, 21, I wouldn't sleep with anyone unless it was really a deep, meaningful, loving relationship, unless we'd said we loved each other, you know, and it all came back to this death anxiety. But they would tell me all the time, you're crazy, you know, why are you passing up all this opportunity just because you want to be different, you know, because it's not bringing you happiness. And they were right, 100%. And so you can make an argument that I'm still in that same place now, but I don't know if I really am, because I don't, you know.
Well, I don't know if I'm following you. You mean, are you saying your mindset may have changed on
that? My mindset has changed in the sense of now I have nothing personally against casual sex.
Mm.
But I don't know just whether that's a tough question, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I totally understand because I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But I have... It's like I said, you know, I guess I was kind of able to separate sex and sexuality. So I did have a lot of fun. I just didn't have sex.
But you never never messed around with someone that you didn't feel a connection with or you weren't attracted to, right? Just for the sake of it.
Messed around, yeah.
Really?
Just not sex.
Really? You know, maybe you are right. Maybe I should just get over it. I keep saying it's just sex. What the fuck, you know?
Maybe that's something that you can explore by not actually having sex, but just messing around. Do you get what I'm saying? Like fun stuff, like explore your kinks or, you know, fuzzy handcuffs. I don't know, whatever. You know, go to play parties and just make out with a bunch of people and maybe finger bang some girls or do whatever it is you're comfortable with, but just don't get to sex. That's really just how I explored my sexuality.
That's a great idea. That is great advice. Please hold me accountable for that, right?
Sure.
Just check back in with me and... Because I'll be honest, I'm not going to lie. And I already know how difficult this is going to be. But that's why I'm asking you to hold me accountable. Because I've got a fucking... You know what I mean? It's about time to fucking get living. Get busy living or get busy dying, all right?
One of the two.
Ay, ay, ay. Because I am. I am on the slalom now, down to death's cold scythe. It's waiting for me. I'm right there. I need to get locked off. All right, so marvelous. Any closing comments?
You know, just like I was saying earlier, you know, I think that John Lennon was right. You know, all you need is love. And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. There's no wrong way to love anybody. Just do your thing, whatever makes you happy.
All right. Wonderful way of closing. Thank you again. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Nigel.
And I'll see you again real soon.
Yeah, cheers. All
right. Cheers. See, what a wonderful girl, eh? Like always, we got into another great discussion as soon as we finished the interview. She told me about how after having to take certain hormones after a surgery, it completely killed her libido for a year. So maybe low testosterone really is the answer. But then maybe having a libido could be worse if I don't figure out this whole dating and sex thing. Aren't I a little old for this? Never too old to kiss a beautiful girl. Woo! We will see. Next week's interview is with Andy, a pretty, fun and gorgeous girl I met through the Infinite Love Facebook group that I'm a member of. Hell of a girl, great interview, and she kissed me.
It just does. You might have to reconcile yourself to it.
Right. Yeah, but I shouldn't reconcile myself with never having sex again, right?
No, you shouldn't. As a matter of fact, what are you doing in a half an hour?
Right, well, it'll be the second time for Griffith Park for you, right?
Yes.
I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. 1 week closer to 6 feet under. Thanks for listening and being part of the journey. Drop me a line if you think you or someone you know would be a good match for me as a parenting partner here in Los Angeles. Before you go, though, you know the deal. Please rate, write a review, and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Show some love. I'll be back next week, but if you want more before, then you can read my weekly blog at nigelwressing.com/blog, where you can also buy merchandise, book me, or just send me a nice message. Until then, wherever you are, whoever you're with, I hope you find kindness and love. Be happy. Hello.